very more open about it, or I don't have the filters that I used to do, because I don't worry so much. My darkest day as well, I remember sitting on the sofa in tears, and I was always the one that would be not that worried about other people. What's the matter, mate? Cheer up, come on, man up, get through it. I was always that one. So I remember sitting on the sofa, crying my eyes out, whilst I was one trying to console myself. And again, it was those two different parts of my brain going. And at that point, I realised that the only person that can actually help me out is me. That people are upset, they're sad, they can see my condition, how bad I am, but that's not going to change. The doctors have said that I need rest, my brain needs to repair itself, get back to it. That's going to take time. Again, that stressed me out because there was no time frame of it.
Welcome to the Roots to Revenue podcast, the podcast where we talk to small business owners to find out about the challenges they've had to overcome to run a successful business. I'm Robbie.
I'm Jason. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about how to run a business whilst knocking on death's door.
Before we begin, let me tell you about today's sponsor. The channel is sponsored by Jobber. Jobber's easy for me to recommend, as it's scheduling and invoicing and quoting software that I've used myself for the last 10 years to run my own business. Not only do my customers love it, but best of all, it gets me paid really fast.
Don't forget about the link, www.premierlawns.link/jobber, to get 40% off your first 3 months. Today, we have David Miller. David, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
David Miller of Pristine Gardens. We're predominantly a garden maintenance company with a smaller lawn care department. I've been in this industry for nearly 25 years now. Started off as a greenkeeper, groundsman. Got to a point where I was fed up with working under people, not enough rewards, too much. One day I decided that I'd had enough. Just after my honeymoon, actually, we were on a 2-week honeymoon. My wife turned around to me and said, "This is the first time we've had a 2-week holiday, and we've been together over 10 years at that point." I was like, "No, we went to see my uncle in America." She said, "No, it was 10 days because you couldn't take 2 weekends off from the golf course." So at that point, I was like, "Do you know what? I've had enough. I'm going to put things on my terms." So my first day back after the honeymoon, handed me notice in. So I had 30 days to get something
going. How long ago was that, David?
That was 2012, so what, probably 12 years, 12 years the company's been going for. Now, yeah, plenty of ups and downs on it, but we've ride through them. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Of course, it's all about the challenges. If self-employment was easier, everyone would do it. So you suffered a really bad injury. Do you want to tell the viewers a bit about that and how long ago it was?
So it must have been about five years ago now. Somewhere around that, I sustained quite a serious head injury. It was 3 bleeds on the brain. 1 minute I was fine, going out, doing what I was doing. Next thing, woke up in hospital the next morning, no idea what had been going on. So I spent 2 weeks in hospital before they released me. It was probably 3 months before I actually left the house. Another 12 months near on, of sort of slowed back to work, bits and bobs.
And was the advice at the time that you'd be going back to work, or did you think that?
At the time, I was struggling with speech, reading, writing. So where the bleeds were so severe, it hit me pretty much on from every angle. I mean, the first bit of work, this must have been around October, November time. And every year we sell Christmas trees. I get the same format spreadsheet from the supplier. I pick the ones we want, highlight them. It's always the trade price minus the VAT. So I work out my VAT, work out my profit margin, and then how much I'm going to sell them for. And I remember it vividly. I was sitting on the sofa with my phone as a calculator, and it took me 45 minutes to work out the plus VAT prices on 5 trees because I couldn't physically function. I knew what I was wanting to do. I know what I was trying to do, but I just couldn't put things together. And one of the trees as well was £20. So off the top of my head, I didn't need the calculator. I knew it was £24. And I knew what we sold it for previous years. But I just couldn't put all that stuff together.
Even must have been very frustrating.
That was the hardest thing, because it was so frustrating knowing that, obviously, like, a lot of people have issues and born with them, whereas mine was sort of overnight. So I can appreciate more now where people struggle with certain things, like Robbie, you were saying about your dyslexia and that sort of stuff, that you don't.
A lot of disabilities are invisible. Yours really would have been.
Yeah, and I don't think people appreciate it because you can't feel it. And like I said, you don't know any different because that's how your brain works. That's who you are. So for you, that's just normal. How it is.
Yeah. For the viewers, I'm dyslexic with numbers, and it's something I've always struggled with, and I try and be quite open about it these days because I think a few people are talking about.
People need to be open about that sort of stuff because everyone's affected the different ways. But so that's where I found it so frustrating because I wasn't born with it. Yeah. I didn't struggle. Numbers and maths at school, as much as I hated school, maths and science was what I loved and what I was good at because there's always a right answer to it. But you can always get to that name and I knew how to work it out. So to all of a sudden be...
And it was something that you couldn't...
And all of a sudden you know, do what you can... Do. I mean, sometimes, like if you fertilise a lawn or doing a lawn care job, you can do it. Sometimes you make mistakes, but to be able to not physically do it and how to check that machine and turn it on, to then not be able to process to do it, it's almost like being an amateur again, but you know how to do it.
And has that response returned?
It has. Most people, all my friends, people who have known me, they joke around it now because they go, "You're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just made you more you." So all my good points I've managed to work out. All my bad points have become worse.
Yes.
So I'm very more open about it. Or I don't have the filters that I used to because I don't worry so much anymore because I've been through it. I know what it's like. And I think... My darkest day as well, I remember sitting on the sofa in tears, and I was always the one that would be not that worried about other people. What's the matter, mate? Cheer up, come on, man up, get through it. I was always the one. I wasn't a moral support giver. I was, come on, plow through, crack on.
Yep, that would probably be me.
So I remember sitting on the sofa, crying my eyes out, whilst I was one trying to console myself.
Yep.
And again, it was... Those two different parts of my brain going. And at that point, I realised that the only person that can actually help me out is me. That people are upset, they're sad, they can see my condition, how bad I am, but that's not going to change. The doctors have said that I need rest, my brain needs to repair itself, get back to it. That's going to take time. Again, that stressed me out because there was no time frame of it.
You don't have time. And in the background... You have a business that's ticking away there, and are you going to have a business to come back to?
Yeah.
Are you going to be fit to come back to that business? What's going to happen there?
And that was one of the sort of stressful things, because if you were told that, so if you go on holiday and leave your business for a couple of weeks, you can set procedures in place for a couple of weeks, you'll be back. But when that's open-ended, that then adds more stress and pressure. So we got to a point where we had to try and come find ways to get around it, because... It wasn't looking like I was actually ever going to come back.
How long were you totally gone for? Were you gone for a couple of days, or a week?
It was two weeks I was in hospital, and then it was a few months. I had communication with the staff and guys, and one of the guys would come around for it. But again, because I struggled with my speech and action and doing stuff, we were able to communicate, but I was pretty useless at what I was doing. And we had no systems in place to generate work.
I'm sure as well that your wife and family and probably the guys working for you were more concerned about trying to even get better than worrying about work as such.
I guess they must have been, but my view at the time as well, because I'd spent all the years building the company up, that the smart thing...
How many years were you in?
So we must have been about, I reckon we were about 5 years in. So we were established enough, but we were still very wet behind the ears. Still a lot of issues and stuff we hadn't come across. Because I never made a business plan because I was always one of those people that would wing it and know things change. So again, I had that attitude of, well, I can write a business plan, but I personally don't know what I want myself or where the company's going. We're evolving as times change, as things go along.
The money was coming in, times are good. You're thinking, why do I need a business plan? Because everything's going well.
Yeah, and I didn't want to then be structured and tied in to a plan that I wasn't happy with myself.
Whenever I first started, did you start your business with a business plan?
But again, because I handed my notice in coming off of honeymoon, it was very much a whim. I had a couple of little gardens that I'd go to after work. A few people went in me.
Before you decided to quit your job, did you have a round pulled up?
No, I had probably, I think one of the customers was my granddad's that I'd go around and do him once a week. Again, that was more
family favour
thing opposed to actually generating money. And I think I had one, maybe two other little customers that I'd done. So the company was born sort of.
And how did you, in the early days, we're going to go back to your injury shortly, but in your early days, how did you first get your name out there, David?
I think originally it was touting around for people I know, making a point that I was looking for work. Did they need anything doing? Facebook's still good, and all the social media stuff, platforms are still good. But I think it was better then because all the new community groups had only just been sort of established. And Facebook was, you put your post on, your friends see it. And that was it. All those community groups hadn't been established then. Yeah.
That was just really the start of maybe ads for free or the buy and sell group?
For us, that made... So Facebook generated a lot of our new leads at the beginning, because if someone was asking for a gardener or a landscaper, there would be three or four of us posting up. Now, you go, and if someone asks for a trade, there's like 50 or 60 people within the space of a couple of minutes. So we still post our name on there to do it, just for more of a branding.
Occasionally you might get a bit of work, but it's not...
Yes.
Would you run any ads on Facebook?
We didn't really.
These days or then?
I do the odd one here and there, but again, because our vans, since we've evolved, we're always in purple. We've got bright purple and green vans.
How many vans did you have on the road at the time of your accident? How many staff did you have?
So there was two vans. One that I was very much doing 24/7 back then, running the business while still on the tool. So we had two gardeners on the gardening side of things, one driver, one apprentice, and then I had a lad that worked with me who's just finished his apprenticeship. So we had two vans, and I was one of the drivers of the van at the time.
And then you had your accident, and how soon did you think, because you were in hospital for 2 weeks, you were obviously gravely ill for a good week, I would say, at least a week?
Well, it was a good few. It was probably about 3 months before I actually sort of left the house and done anything at all.
What happened to the business whenever you got sick or whenever you suffered?
We were very very lucky. All the guys chipped in and done their part, so which was good to keep us afloat. But in reality, they were doing what they were already doing. They just didn't have me to hold their hands anymore. So things like the marketing and advertising, I was in control of all of that. Ordering all the materials, paying all the bills, that was all answering the phone. All that stuff relied on me. So we were very lucky that we had a good client base for the gardeners so they could crack on
I take it somebody stepped in and emailed all your customers to let them know that something had happened, or was that communicated through your employees?
Yeah, the employees done it. Because I was so sort of oblivious of what had been going on, there was a lot of people that knew about it before I even knew they would. So word spread pretty quick about it. So again, we were lucky in that aspect that the guys would pass on to the clients to say that they would need to be dealt with directly, I wasn't going to be in contact.
A number of years ago, my own wife wasn't well, and we emailed all the customers, and I must say the support that we had from customers was amazing, and a lot of people give you a lot more leeway, obviously, if they know. Especially with a small business.
We were very lucky again with that, especially with suppliers and people. Again, I've always been very, very, again, in the early days, because you're trying to cut down on costs, get things as cheap as possible. But then I got to a point realising if I was doing a fencing job, I was spending so much time chasing around to try and get the customer a better price. The materials may not match the quality. So I very fastly realised that to stick to, I've got my preferred supplier, whether it be lawn feeds, topsoil, paving, fencing, that's the supplier I use. There's no negotiations on it. We use them because I can guarantee the quality of it. They may not be the cheapest. They're a fair price and you're going to get the good quality, which is my reputation.
You provide, so a local, if you're buying off a local supplier, And if you're always just buying all your stuff off to one person, they're going to be getting a good turn out of it, and you're going to get a good turn out of it, and they're going to look after you.
And that did pay massive dividends in this aspect, because we had landscaping job that was mid-project that I wasn't able to order materials for, pay for them. But again, because we had a good relationship, they were still sending materials to the job saying, don't worry, we'll put it on. And we didn't even have accounts with some of these. They were still.
Do you want to give any of them a wee shout out?
So we've got Manya, based in Guildford. They were absolute diamonds. Whenever the guys would call up to order materials, straight round. How's Dave doing? I hope he's doing all right.
Any other guys?
We've got Gunners Skip Hire, same thing. We owed them, I think offhand, probably about £1,000 in time anyway. They were still sending us skips, still supplying us. When I started to get back on my feet, they refused to take money for probably about 6 months because they said that they knew how much stress the company had been under. They wanted their money. But also, I was a small fish, and they didn't want to put the company under any more pressure. So whenever they sent the monthly invoice out to us after that, it would always be with a note saying, don't worry about this, pay us when you can. If you've got extra, then top it.
That's basically over here, that local suppliers totally stop.
And Magna's fixings and fastening, the same thing for nuts and bolts and that sort of stuff. So all AVS fencing, they all done as much as they could to keep us going, with the view that we understand that there's no one there to pay the bills.
It's good to have that as and when you can.
It's amazing that.
And I said they are all local businesses, in which we use that principle because we know they're good and local. And I said at a time like that, it massively paid dividends. And I don't. Suppliers are quite often taken for granted because you sort of feel that, well, you're giving them money, they need your service. You don't appreciate how much they would do for you and what that relationship you build.
My local supplier is called Andy Stores, and I've said about being dyslexic with words. Can be a lot of the time now, I just walk in and tell them what I need, and they'll work it all out for me, and I'll walk out the door with whatever I need.
Yeah.
As opposed to most people walk in with the numbers and they'll say to me, what about this? I'm like, I don't know.
Again, so, one of our suppliers is still saying, now I won't, I've already mentioned, but I won't check because I don't know whether he should actually be doing it. But the same thing, like, I won't call up. I've got his personal number. So if I need some materials or something delivered, I'll send him a quick text because I'm too lazy or too busy to call. I'll send him a quick text. Can you order this for me? Yeah, no worries, mate. It'll be delivered whatever day. But when I owe money anyway, thinking about it. I always say to him, I'll pop, can you get it delivered, run the order up, and I'll pop in tomorrow and settle up with you. And I think that was last week, I should have.
On the same token, you would have good customers yourself. They would say, we're stuck here, can you do A, B, and C for me? And you'd move them to the top, or you would do whatever you can for them. So good, I suppose it just comes down to good customer service. So we're out of action for 2 or 3 months. What happened then whenever, was there suddenly a break in work because you were doing all the quoting?
It was a massive break. Again, we were lucky that we had a few big jobs lined up in the pipe. So they ran sort of over time, over budget. But yeah, the sensible thing, and everyone advised me, the accountant said, like, I should just shut the company down, worry about myself, and then set up again later, which would have been the sensible thing to do. But I didn't want to see all four of us down the job centre. I was very stubborn in the fact that I've worked this hard, I can plough through it. So we had work lined up. It then started to fizzle out. So financially, we struggled. The company, in the years before, we weren't making great money, but we were making money. Those two next tax years come through, we ran at a loss of about £35,000 over that 18 months across those two bills. And then obviously once I was back in action and come back,
you must have had an understanding bank manager as well.
Well, so lucky or unlucky enough, my nan had passed away, so I had inheritance money in the bank. So again, whether you could fate or time, so we were in a good position that with the money we owed suppliers, I didn't have enough to cover that, but there was money in the bank to see it. So again, maybe if I didn't know that the suppliers weren't going to give us leeway, I couldn't fund it. But again, I was confident that I was going to come back. Because if I sat there with that negative attitude of shutting the company down, what would I have to go back to? So I think for me, it gave me that extra fight. I've got to go back. I could see things slowly slipping away. Because we didn't just vanish, but you could see it slowly slipping away. So it gave me more of the incentive to fight, to get myself up and running, to get back in, because it was the only option.
to run your own business or run a small business, you do have to fight, but you had to fight especially.
It's a double hard. Especially when the doctor's saying you can't go to work, you can't put yourself under stress and aggravation or have a negative effect on your recovery while you're still there.
So what systems did you start to put in place then so as a business could push forward?
So we had to pretty much do everything. When everything's running fine, like, you take it for granted. So weird times, like, we didn't even have like customers' details properly. So if someone was going to another job and trying to describe it to someone else, oh, Mrs., you need to go around Mrs. Jones's house and fix a fence panel. Oh, which one's that? Oh, Ennismore Avenue. What numbers? So some of the guys would have the house name.
Yep.
Some of them would have the name and address and wouldn't even know the customer's name.
The red door.
Because it,
the red door down
yeah,
that street.
That's how bad it was. But it worked like it for years. And it wasn't really an issue because if someone was looking for a job or we hadn't had a document, it was either part text on one of the work phone or my phone on an email somewhere. So we could always access it or someone would know. So we never really saw it as a problem. It was a bit of an inconvenience, but someone would go, I've got a job sheet with Mrs. Jones on it. Who the F is Mrs. Jones? And then call up and we get it sorted. So, which is fine until I wasn't there.
Yep. And then it's not fine.
So you've got all these pieces of the puzzle. And same like invoicing and sending out the quotes. The guy's perfectly capable of going to do 6 fence panels and posts. They know where to order the materials for. They know AVS fencing are going to sort it for them. They know that they don't have to worry about paying for it as well. And they know roughly how long it's going to take them. But they don't know how to quote.
Yep, or if a van breaks down or if something breaks down and there's an unusual bill that's not in the banking system, then somebody's going to have to set up that payment. Or so, say the work's not coming in because those guys don't know how to quote.
So again, like, I think there's so many apps and stuff. Obviously, we're sitting around one of them now. There's so many different apps and ways of doing it. And they are great. They make things streamlined so much easier. But even if you still stick to pen and paper and don't want to do it, it's having that system. Because it was all up there.
I've been using Jobber for 10 years. And I can go back. I can look at any customer I have and go back 10 years and look at all their quotes and invoices and visits. I know everything about how long we've been there and all the rest. And it's amazing having all that just in the one place.
Exactly. And whether it's an app or documented, if you've got that paper trail, the guys could have guessed a job. So like saying, like now with the apps now, they could actually go through the old invoice, the old job sheets, and see we've got it all systemised now, that price per post and panel and all the quotes. You literally, like I'm saying, you just tap it in and the computer does it all for you.
And
you can check.
What app are you? Did you have a look at a few different apps? What app are you using? What software are you using?
It's one called Big Change at the moment. So very similar to what Jobber is. So everyone's slowly moving away from. But again, they've all got their uses. They're all very similar on it for us because we run multiple maintenance vans. So for us, it was more the way that the set out and scheduling is done. But the basic principles are all there.
And then do all your guys have? Would you give all your guys access to the quoting now? Would you give how much access? Would you give it away, or what sort of policies have you since put in place since, because you've brought on software, manage your business, and you give people more responsibility? It's something that I've actually taken away from these podcasts. Is we had a fellow, Jack Chapman from Kennedy.
Yeah, no, Jack.
And Jack said something to me that's really stuck in the podcast. How long could your business run with you not there?
That's an old comment. It's been around for, that was one of the first things I go back on Facebook, how we generated work. Local networking groups was where we generated a few. I mean, it wasn't good, not good as in generating enough leads, but there was a few there. But what I found with local networking groups is, for a startup company, I didn't go in. I wanted to get work from these people, but also as well, there were contacts that I didn't yet have. So I had my accountant, who's, I've known, Hockley Wright & Co. I've known him for a long time, would never change, but there's still certain aspects. Abstract design, my graphic designer Tara, I met her through there, and all those little people that you don't necessarily have that's a friend, I met a good network. Yeah,
as recently the networking group, and I met a girl that does HR, and she's since done contracts for me, and we had her on the podcast. It's amazing just going trying to get out and meet people the amount of people you have in contact with you and as in your local area that you would never meet unless you actually get
And again, it's having that personal contact
people buy from people.
Rather than going to a big company that may have been cheaper, again, to have that personal contact. Again, because I'm very lazy in what I do. I don't have the time to wait around people. Even insurance for the vans and the cars, it's done through a broker. Yep. The finance is done through a broker. So I've got that one point of contact. I don't have to remember or worry about it. They're the ones chasing me for the renewal.
Whenever you're relying on the likes of, was any of your car insurances, was any of the van insurances up for renewal?
Luckily, that was one of the things that I did have in place before. Again, out of my laziness with that aspect, it wasn't with the broker. So I'd get a yearly email from a month beforehand saying the renewal policy is up for renewal. These are the vehicles we've got on file. This is what you paid last year. This is what renewal wanted.
Yep.
I didn't think that was good enough. So I recommend that we go with this company. Are you happy to do that? Yes. And it's literally, yes. So again, even little things.
And what other things have you put in place to manage the business now? Because you've quite a unique way to run your gardening pair business. But what other policies or what other things have you put in place that would allow you to work remotely away from the business?
So again, it's all down to the procedures on these apps because everything's all there. So the guys, all the customers' details are all there in one place. It's easy access if they need to. I mean, on our one, I can see every team's diaries, all the customers' details there. If one of the guys is going on holiday or leave or needs a job covered by someone else, I can drag it across
everything runs on my back end, in the office, everything runs on Jobber. And my whole business is sits on Jobber. Like you say, you can see where teams are, does so many different things.
Yeah,
we just focus on doing the work.
Yes. So the job role that I had when I was off is pretty much become obsolete now because I advise the guys with their jobs. I help them quote the stuff. I do a lot of the admin side of things, but the bulk of it is done. So I say that I'm in the office doing admin. So the computer's doing most of it.
So whenever the workers are watching this, what are you actually doing in that office?
So again, everything is there. So, which helps me then focus my time on training the guys.
And the guys doing work wasn't getting the work in.
But even down to the call handling, that was where we didn't realise how much work we were losing by not being responsive. Because as much as if people were looking for a garden in the local area, we've got 6 or 7 vans out. We've got good branding. So most people around the Guildford area, if you mention Pristine Gardens, they would have seen or know or heard of us.
If, even with having 6 vans in the road, I'd imagine if somebody says, oh, can anybody recommend a gardener? You guys have a really strong presence.
Yes, so that's what we realised once we restructured things, that we're quite high on that recommendation of someone looking. We come quite high up that list. We're easy to find on the internet. We're easy to find. But unless it's a personal recommendation that someone that does know us and wants us directly, we may have come top of that list, but they're not going to sit and wait for us. So if they make that phone call and we don't answer, which was probably happening 9 out of 10 times, they would then call someone else. And by the time you get back to them in the evening, sometimes like even the next day, it's already been sorted. Mm. So which we found that quite hard, especially being a small business, because
whoever answers the phone usually wins the work. Yeah, if you can answer the phone, get out to see the customer in a good time, get the quote to them in a good time, then there's a very good chance that you're going to win that work.
And we found that no one could answer that phone because
something I can relate to.
Because we tried swapping it around with the guys to do. They were busy on the tool. I was either, and it's always Sod's Law, I could be sitting around all day. I go out for one meeting and the phone rings whilst I'm in the middle of that meeting. So we were just constantly. So
do you use a call answering service or?
That's what we do now. So all the calls now go straight to someone to answer for us. They take all the details, and then again, I can just fire it out to whoever's relevant to chase up to do it.
Do you use somebody local for that, or do you use a national company?
It's a local VA company that do it all for us.
I think because it's a lot of people I've talked to people about this in the past, and they say although the national ones can be really good. A lot of people then, if the accent's different, then they're like, who am I talking to here? Is this a large company that don't necessarily want to deal with? Type of thing, they're phoning you because they want a local gardening company. So having somebody with a local accent is key.
And I think that definitely is key. But again, it's just that first point of contact. Whereas they can take the message and say someone be in touch. That might be 8 o'clock in the morning, and I might not be able to call them till 8 o'clock at night. But
they answer the phone and say, we've got your details. We'll be in touch.
So as long as you don't go too far out, people then wait. And I would say, but if they've called the first, they won't call at 8 o'clock in the morning and you not pick up, and then try again at 8 o'clock at night, they move on. But if you've picked up that phone the first time, then they will sit and wait for you to do it. So I think that is a very key.
Because people they have a need. At the end of the day, people have a need. I want to get my garden done, or I want to get that fence fixed. They'll go through, they'll find the gardener, phone them up. Yes, we'll be in touch. That's that need served. Yeah. They can go off and do something else then.
And it wasn't until we'd done that we realised how many jobs we were actually missing, because obviously we were getting...
You thought you were doing well, but...
Yeah, a few calls every week or whatever it might have been. All of a sudden, the emails coming from the VA company were sort of 4 or 5 times what it was previously. And we go, we're not advertising or marketing more. It's just that when the phone hasn't got signal or what we're missing, it escalated. And then you're probably the same. When you set up, your pockets are so tight that you haven't got money. You try and do everything because you can't afford to, because you're, I could do that myself, so I can't afford to pay someone to do it. As soon as you take that jump and do it, all of a sudden that money comes back. So it's easier for us to say now because we're more established. So stuff like that, we go, let's get that in. We're not raking in the money, but we've got cash flow coming in. We've got amount sitting in the bank for our marketing stuff. So if we see something, we can action it and do it. We don't have to, if we see it as an investment for the company, we can go out and do it. But I think even as a small company, have that confidence in yourself to do it. By something like that, we pay probably between £40 and £80 a month. And it's based on, I think there's a minimum charge, and then we get X amount of calls for it, and then up on top. So those little things like that, have the confidence that you're going to do it, because they will generate the work and make life easier for you. And while you're doing all this admin stuff, you're not earning money either.
Yeah, on billable hours. The time you spend, any small business owner will admit to that. Any time you spend not on the tools, that's the time that you can't really do.
That's again a reason why we still do landscaping work, but we don't promote it as much. It's normally people that know of us.
There can be a lot of running around and pricing, and then all of a sudden you don't get it anyway.
What we're saying is you might earn higher rates on the landscaping, but for the 8 hours you've done on site, you've probably done 2 or 3 site visits, all the time on a quote. So you've done 4 hours unbillable. So by the time you take your unbillable time off, we're not actually making any more.
Have you looked at charging for that quote, and then if they buy, taking the money off the price?
We did. Potentially I might start doing it again, but got to a point, and the guys were pretty much the same. Even the ones that prefer the landscaping side realised that there's money. Look, the garden maintenance is always going to go. Once you've got a customer, the customer's there, you're not chasing it. And also, do you want to be carrying like 6.99 on paving slabs or concrete fence posts while you could be walking behind a mower? So we got to the point, landscaping's a great industry, and in a lot of respect, there's some really good guys out there that do it.
But there's not a lot of old guys out doing it.
No, and do I actually want to be doing that? Not really.
Don't forget about the link, premierlawns.link/jobber, to get 40% off your first 3 months. This will also help support the channel.
Did you know that you can find this podcast on all the major platforms such as Apple or Spotify, or you can watch it on video on YouTube?
If you know anybody who you think could benefit from this podcast, please share it with them, or if not, if you could leave us a review, that would really help.
So after all that, it'd be interesting to know if anyone else has had any issues like we have, whether it be yourself being off sick, a key member of staff being off sick, or even when you go on holiday, how does your business function? What issues do you have? Do you come back to a mountain of issues and problems? I'm sure everyone has these sort of problems, whether it be major or minor. Leave us a comment and let us know what issues you've had along there and how you've dealt with them.
So after your accident and coming back into running the business again, what is the unique way that you run your business now?
So this all started a bit prior. There was a big overlap. So we run on a franchise basis. It was something that was putting, I can't remember the exact days, my memory got a bit screwed with it all, but it all coincided around the same time, is my biggest issue with running a business, which is probably the same for anything, is customers and staff are your biggest headache. If we didn't have either of them, life would be great. But
left for their customers would be.
But he's taking that. And we had it a number of times on the garden maintenance round, again, because we didn't have ways to check up on people, we didn't have procedures. The guys would be given a list of jobs to go out for the day, call the team leader at the end of the day, so at 5 o'clock. Like, how'd you get on? Everything done? Yeah, all good. Any problems? Well, we didn't get to Mrs. Jones's house. Right. The A3 was bad. So we were stuck on there for 2 hours. So you're like, right, you've left it till the end of the day to now tell me this. Mrs. Jones is going to be on the phone to me soon asking where her gardeners are, what's been going on, why hasn't she been notified? Have we made any money now because we haven't completed all the jobs? And you sit there going, why didn't you just not go on the A3 or come off at the next junction? Going the round the other way around.
Think for yourself a bit.
You've got a list of jobs like that. You don't actually do them in the order I've written them down. You've got your set round that you feel is best, which is what you do, which is fine because that's the route you go around. But why didn't you just go backwards or change it around? But it's not there.
I'm going to give a wee shout out to Jobber now, because Jobber on the app, you can see all the customers for the day on the
location. On a map version.
I used to put all the jobs in order, but now Jason just ignores that and goes. It just goes the most sensible route for the day for the traffic.
I was on the booking system, so if you're still booked in for midnight, because I know they're not going to do it in the that way, but yeah. Also for pure reason is if the customer sees that their booking's at midnight, they're not thinking you're going to be there at midnight. But if they see that their booking's showing up on the calendar at 10 o'clock or whatever, they will.
I don't think in our game, in garden maintenance, you can work off times. So it's just
no, so a lot of people do expect it and want it, but again, it's not viable. So,
too many variables.
The weather and traffic and trying to get around everyone. And so how does that franchise model work? Because the way you do it is quite unique for a garden maintenance thing. Do you want to tell us a wee bit?
So Richie, he showed up, again, all piggyback. When I got to that thought pattern of going, like, how do I get them out of this routine? And I said to one of the apprentices at the time, it's probably on, say, £60-70 a day, so something like that. Apprentice wage, it wasn't great. But I think we were charging £15 an hour. And they would never message me too close to the end of the day because they knew a standard job would be an hour. So if it got to an hour or so towards the end of the day, if it was a 2 o'clock, they might go, oh, we've done all the work, anything else you want to do? If it got to sort of 3:30, they'd be in that realm of going, well, if we call Dave now, he gives us another job. We're going to get another job, and we're going to be working 15 minutes. So do I want to work 15 minutes late or finish 45 minutes early? So no one in their right mind would do that on the salary. And I said to the apprentices, I said, look, if you rang me up 3:15 for another job, and I said, yeah, sorry, you and Gary, go and do this job. I'll give you an extra tenner on your wages. Gary will have an extra tenner, and that's an extra tenner's profit for the company. I said, you'd do that, wouldn't you? And I could see you ticking his brain how much he was earning an hour, that £10 for extra 15 minutes was an absolute steal for him. Yeah. Of course, well, why don't you then? But again, so that's why the franchise thing just came up, because I was like, do you know what? All the problems I'm having with running staff is because they don't feel it benefits them. If it's same as a lot of most employers' staff are the same. They see someone at the top, you're earning them money, which isn't actually the case half the time. But that's the mentality that people see.
People just see the money coming in, they don't necessarily see the cost of it.
And all the problems that we were having, a one-man band gardener doesn't have, because he goes, oh, traffic's bad. Or either it's going to be a late day or a drive the other way around. So you don't get that loss of income. You don't have the... Because you just deal with it, because you're doing it for you. How can I get that through? So what we ended up doing was dividing the company up between the current staff. And go, right, that's your round that you're doing now. Have the same round. You use the same either buy the van off me or it can be financed in your name. But what you do, you pay a token amount into the pot to cover all the marketing, the advertising, we're still generating the work. And you're doing the same job you were, and it ended up being that by the time we worked it all out, they were getting more money because our overheads dropped by doing it that way. they were earning more money for doing the exact same job.
They were working underneath the umbrella of your name, but they're invoicing the customers themselves. So you're providing the work to them, and they're self-employed. So a lot of, because whenever you first explained to me this, I thought, God, why doesn't that's something the revenue would pull you on? But
yeah,
because they're invoicing you're not invoicing.
No,
the customers.
They invoice the customers. They do it, but what it meant was they then had that vested interest in the company that they didn't.
If they work that extra half an hour, it's their money. It's not.
And I think with some of them in the early days as well, it wasn't even so much if they did an extra half hour, it's extra money. Once they started getting the complaint if they weren't there or decided to come up, they didn't like that. So then they would, even for yourself, you go, I can't be bothered to do that last job. I don't really. And you will try and delay it to another day if you can. But also, you go, oh, no, it's that customer. They're not going to like that. Right, I'm just going to work late to keep them happy because I don't want them to be complaining to us. So it made us more reliable because the guys didn't want the issues. They didn't want the problems.
Yep.
And they were doing it for themselves.
And do you just charge them and advertise? Do you charge them an advertising fee, or would you take a cut of their revenue as well?
No, we don't take a cut of revenue. I know a lot of franchises do. The solicitors, when they drafted over the contract, said that I should do it. The accountants, everyone said I should. My pure reasoning for it is because most of them are small one-man band people. They don't want to build it up like that. And I didn't want to encourage people to sort of doctor their books. And because if I have access, it would mean I'd have to have access to all their accounts to see how much I should be getting of it.
It's more work.
Then it's more work for me, more stress. And also is that would then encourage, maybe they wouldn't, but I felt that might encourage people to doctor their books and not declare as much because I was going to take 10% of it or whatever out, that then the revenue. So I just thought, as much as it would be a moneymaker thing, it would open a can of worms that I didn't want to be,
You want it a little bit easier, I suppose, as well. If you've been through quite a traumatic experience, you want your life as reasonably easy as you can, and you can do it like that in the case, get a really good deal, and the customers are getting a good deal as well because they're not having to pay your franchise thing. So suppose like a we'll not name any franchises, but if you're paying any franchise, then a certain amount of that money goes towards head office.
That's
not necessarily the money in garden maintenance to pay for that.
No, so again, my view was like, to help, I enjoy helping other people, and that was always my biggest downfall as being a boss, because I'd help the people as much as I could. I enjoy giving the advice and helping people. So for me, it was more like, I want your business to succeed. So I don't want you to think that I'm helping you out so you can earn more money, so I earn more money. If your business does well under our banner or doesn't, it has no impact on me. We're offering you advice. We're giving you all the marketing.
What happens if somebody comes along and they say, we want to work under that, and they're happy enough, and then they go out and they provide substandard work?
Well, that's it. So, again, contracts that are sort of 30 odd pages. Like, again, this is where the systems, we don't actively advertise to get franchises in either. So some people are aware that that's how we act. A lot of people don't, because all the people that have come on board are people that know us, know the company, previous employees, and see the benefit of doing it.
And how many people work underneath that, and how many other staff members do you have?
So there's five franchise vans running out at the moment with about 12 on the ground.
Do you think you would have done that if you hadn't had the...
I think I would have done, because it was something we had in the pipe work.
You were thinking,
and I'd been thinking about anyway. It just got pushed further ahead because it became more of a necessity of doing it. Again, that's why we don't actively look for people to come on board, because even over the last 4 or 5 years, we're still trying to develop those procedures, check things.
Would it be generally people that come and work for you, and then after you know them and they know you, you would offer it to them?
Yeah, so everyone on the foot has been an employee or employee of a franchisee at some point down the line. So we haven't actually taken... So yeah. One of the guys, Steve, if you watch this, he worked for me at the very beginning when I first set up. I started to get a few extra jobs in that I needed someone to help me out. He worked with me for a few months on and off, but because we weren't generating enough steady money, he had to go and get a job elsewhere because I couldn't sustain him. We always stayed in contact. Once we had the franchise system set up, I got talking to him. I said, look, why don't you come back to us? And Steve, his terms were, this is what I earn each month. I've got grandkids now. I'd quite like to have Mondays off for a long weekend. If I can earn the same amount of money, even better if I can earn more, over 4 days rather than doing five now, he said, I'll definitely come back. He said, you know me, I'm not about the money. I don't want to be a millionaire, but I want the lifestyle. I know the company. If the money stacks up, so we put the figures together, and he ended up earning nearly double what he was over the 4 days and his 5 days before. So it's all people that know the concept, know how we work.
And that would be more in a self-employed business. So although he's earning double, would that be double after his expenses or double before his expenses?
That's after his expenses. He wasn't in... would make you millionaires overnight. So he wasn't in, obviously, wasn't in a massive high paid job. He was in an okay job, but he got the lifestyle he wants. Again, with someone like Steve, a lot of the guys need the regular income. So they try and put people on contract, make sure there's work coming in the winter. Whereas Steve, he's not bothered. If it rains and he's got enough money, if he takes a few weeks off over the winter, he's in a very nice position that he's managed to get the lifestyle from it. So we have a very mixed range of people like him that just tick along. He's happy. He has his family life. Other guys that are more hungry need the money, but they know the more hours and the more they put in, the more they're gonna make.
And tell me this here: do you have any exits planned for taking yourself out of the business, or do you think is that something you're looking to build up and then sell on?
I don't think I'd ever. You never know what's around the corner, but. I never...
You're still young, you have another...
I've got a long time to think about it. Yeah. I never enjoyed the office work. Like I was saying, when I was working on the golf courses, I enjoyed working with the younger staff and training them and helping. So the job suits me. It doesn't... We haven't got enough people on board for it to pay. I still do bits and bobs and lawn care on the side because it doesn't generate money. All the money that comes in from the franchise goes straight into that account. We then use it for more marketing, more advertising... So we get better clients, bigger jobs. So it's more of a long term view.
But I suppose a bit like Uber or a lot of Airbnb, or they see the money coming in, but they constantly spend it on marketing to grow it bigger
and keep going.
And eventually, at some point down the future, it'll make a lot more money.
And again, with me learning that I didn't have systems in place to even sustain the business myself to start with when I was off sick, we had to put that in place. But this opened up another can of worms. So even though we've been doing it for a good few years, I still don't feel confident enough to get someone external in to work under our name, because that money's not... I'd love the extra money, but not at a cost to the company. So we want to make sure that everything's set in stone. We've had a lot of teething problems, a lot of issues with franchisees that we've had, which we knew were going to happen, but also we didn't know what was going to happen with it, how it was going to happen, and how we were going to deal with it. So I've deliberately sort of keep dragging it out until I know that I'm confident that everything's in place. Like I said, the better the devil...
There's probably another avenue there that you... there's probably another avenue for you. You'd probably find that there's quite a lot of companies out there that would probably pay you for advice on how to do it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, something...
So I'm going to... We'll leave David's email down in the show notes, and anybody that wants to maybe contact you,
you could maybe
offer a wee consultation on that, because I would say there'd be people out there that'd be listening to this call.
I like that business plan.
I quite like the thought of that.
But we caught years ago, we used to call it the pristine curse, because pretty much anything that could happen, someone extreme or not, we had it happen to someone. so most issues with businesses, we're pretty adapt to. Well, I'd imagine we've.
Well, you've done pretty well. You've grown a business after having a near-death experience, so I'll take my hands off to you. Listen, David, thank you very much for coming over and taking part in the podcast. Very interesting talking to you. Thank you very much. Do you want to, just before we go, do you want to tell the viewers where you travelled from today?
So, Guildford, Surrey, flew out of Gatwick this morning. So.
Over to Belfast here, so brilliant. Listen, thanks very much, and don't forget to smash the like button. Thank you.